This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes,
y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Conan, guess what?
What up?
Support for today's episode comes from Vincero. If you aren't familiar with Vincero yet, they make exceptionally crafted and stylish watches at affordable prices. Other premium handcrafted watches don't fit the everyday person's budget. You can finally own a high-quality and lasting timepiece without going broke. If you're looking for a perfect Valentine's Day gift for yourself or someone you love, you can now save 20%. That's a big number. Plus free shipping site-wide with our exclusive code K100. Support the show and check them out at Vincero, that's V-I-N-C-E-R-O collective.com, and use code K100. And basically what this is a premium lifestyle brand. Guess where they're based out of, Conan?
Where?
San Diego, California.
Boom.
And basically their goal is to help everyday person accessorize their outfits with premium products at a price that makes sense. So they're trying to give you some quality looking stuff minus the designer prices. And they design everything in your house. Source their own materials and produce in small batches. They're committed to doing things well or not at all. And for all the boss men and women out there, their watches are a must. I wear one of them. I haven't worn a watch in 30 years. I'm wearing them now. And they can elevate your look with the twist of the wrist. They're made with surgical-grade stainless steel, durable silicone, and Italian marble straps. And these sleek, quad, modern watches come with reliable automatic and Japanese quartz movements. They're great watches. And they also have sunglasses that can polarize with handcrafted frames and so many styles to choose from, too. And they also have jewelry. So you ask for it, they listen. From pendants to chains to bold bracelet statements, Vincero is consistent with their jewelry drops. They're perfect to come to your watch. And ladies, or men, if you're buying for your partner, Vincero's women's jewelry is designed to stand out and keep you feeling confident. And they make it easy to reinvent your style one accessory at a time. They have everything here. The Vincero Collective is your one-stop shop for Valentine's Day, and they even offer a 5-year guarantee with a 365-day free return policy to make gift giving even easier. They're putting their stock in this product and betting on it and saying, you know, you have a year to return these if you don't like it. That's an unbelievable deal. So whether it's a gift for yourself or someone in your life, add Vincero to the top of your wish list. Joe, you know, you have a wish list, so maybe put some Vincero products on this. So don't wait, or it'll be too late. Get 20% off plus free shipping site-wide with their code K100 at www.vincerocollective.com. Support our show and check them out at VinceroCollective.com and use the code K100. Look good, feel good, and save big with Vincero. And our listeners, they listen to our advice with grooming products, with fitness products, supplement products. The Vincero Collective puts the icing on the cake with all the stuff they offer.
Now, real quick, we found out about this through Joe because he does ads for other shows. And he had used the Vincero product. What was it that got you interested so you could recommend it here? Because I know Disc ordered something, but I don't know if he got it yet.
Yeah, I much like Disc, I'm not a big watch wear type, but I checked this out a couple of months ago, and I got the Rogue, it's called. And there's dozens of these different designs to look at. I like the Rogue black watch. Very straightforward, very comfortable. You know how sometimes you get a watch, it slides around, it's noisy, you're not comfortable with it. This is nothing like that. It's very, very comfortable on your wrist. Tells perfect time, and I think it's cool looking. I really, really enjoyed this watch. I'm happy that I purchased it.
Yeah, I got the watch. Right. Excellent. Yeah.
Because I ordered the glasses, mm-hmm. but they also got jewelry. They got some cool little chains. You know, everything they do is really well done. If not, we wouldn't promote it. Look your best. With a watch, with a chain, with some glasses, some cool glasses, by the way, not the ones that Joe has on with the peeling tint at Vincero. Boom.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino pride, the ambassadors of violence. LAX, K-Dog, the notorious 187 homicide.
Bang, the bang, the bang, bang. Don't say nothing. Bang, the bang, the bang, bang. We be thumping. Bang, the bang, the bang, bang. Just act like you know and homie, stop crying.
Welcome to stomping. I'm from Miami, not Compton. Down with the essays in the 6-4 hopping. To my boricuas in the 787. And those up in Brooklyn pulling 211.
I come through stomping, rolling in my low top chucks, making sure you suckers feel me every time we bust. Shackled up like a nut, going 5150. G'd up in the feet up, greased up in some dickies.
I rap a lot, like the label out of Houston. Sneaky like the clock up in the shop, straight boosting. To all my gente down in Juarez. Calma de momento, paisa, no dispares.
Put it down from Killer Kelly to the MIA. Ask the homie Crazy K, yo man, that boy don't play. It's in my N-I-A-K, putting it down all day. Representing Southern Cali, eat in my way, you'll get sprayed.
We be dropping,
bang, the bang, the bang, bang.
Don't say nothing,
bang, the bang, the bang, bang.
We be dropping,
bang, the bang, the bang, bang.
Just act like you know.
Yo, we welcome back a friend of the show, good old time friend, a guy that always pays his bills, a big Pittsburgh fan, always hated, never duplicated, and he is the real authentic super genius, Mark Madden. Boom. What's up, Mark? Well,
that is a accurate but yet inspiring introduction, Conan. Thanks very much. Good to talk to you guys again.
Yeah.
I just want to reiterate that one of the conditions Madden made for being on the show is that we had to refer to him as a super genius.
That's not true. That's not true.
Is that accurate?
No, that's inaccurate, but I you know, it is kind of the way I travel, you know? I mean, it's like you and that nose, it's me and my IQ.
Why are you being so derogatory comments like that? Why would you do that?
Because it's a huge nose. Look in the mirror.
Not only that, Mark, I would like to point out that any time that you have any, like your soccer team loses, your hockey team isn't doing good, anything like that, he needs to go on social media and try to bury you over it. So it's everything that you throw at him is well warranted.
Well, the most difficult thing about Disco is when he brown noses somebody, it's like giving them a colonoscopy.
1,000%.
That's not funny.
So anyways, one of the reasons that we wanted to get you back on the show, Mark, is that obviously we were all friends with Eddie and Chris. We all saw Dark Side of the Ring. And so we wanted to, it's a topic that's very, you know, right now, since it just came out, everybody's talking about it. So wanted to get your overall views on that show. What stuck out to you the most?
Well, I thought it was a very accurate show and very disturbing because of that. There were a few times where I broke down and cried, I have to admit, like when Chris Benoit, when they showed him on WWE TV, just wildly weeping upon Eddie's death. You know, it brought back some memories of, you know, both those guys and how close they were. And the overall thing that I always kind of thought, but the show reiterated, you know, people talk about CTE and the steroids and what made Chris do it. Nobody will ever really know what made Chris Benoit murder his family and then kill himself. But as good a guess as any is that his heart broke when Eddie Guerrero died, and then his mind followed. I think Chris just went quickly downhill after Eddie died, and I think all the things that happened with Chris after Eddie's death kind of confirmed that. I was glad that the documentary told Nancy's story, who was a great performer in her own right and just the sweetest person, as we all know. I was glad that David Benoit, Chris's son by his first marriage, you know, got to tell his story as well, because, you know, the survivors like Sandra Toffoloni and David Benoit, they're kind of the living victims in all this. And I thought it was just a great thing, totally cool, that Chris Jericho brought Sandra and David back together after all those years. You know, Jericho's a hell of a guy. I mean, we like to, you know, mess with them because he's our friend and has been for many, many years. But in terms of doing God's work, for Jericho to do that was just unbelievable. And I give him, you know, 10 out of 10 for that. I thought the documentary was really well produced. I thought everybody, except Kevin Sullivan, who declined to be interviewed, but I thought everybody who should have talked on it did talk on it. I thought it was very complete, just extremely well done. And to repeat, it was very disturbing. It was that accurate and that all-encompassing as to be disturbing, especially if you knew Chris and Eddie too. I think for people who looked at it totally from the outside, the disturbing angle might not figure in, but it definitely did for me.
Yeah. What stuck out to you, D.I.?
With respect to the CTE, I think that the thing was with Chris, it was kind of like a perfect storm in that you know, like when the football players were coming out and they're committing suicide, you know, because of CTE. And it's like that level of depression that you're holding inside you, you know, and like the way it manifests itself. And so let's assume, you know, Chris had the CTE and stuff and everything. Let's assume that he was going down that path. In the middle of going down that path, he loses his closest friend in the world. And I just wonder, like, you know, like what it would have been like for him had Eddie not died, had he not had to deal with that. And like how maybe like that kind of like triggered the next things in your brain, which take the depression to the next level, where it's like you not only take your own life, but like, you know, something happens and you take other lives too. You know, and
I think that's a real good point. And again, I think so much of it traces back to Eddie's death. I really do. I always kind of thought that, but watching the documentary made me think that more than ever. I thought there was also a lot of, you know, there was a thing in there about how stubborn wrestlers can be. For example, you know, Harley Race did that diving headbutt, and he told people, don't do that. It's going to mess up your neck and spine. Then Dynamite Kid did it anyway, and afterward he said, don't do that, I'm in a wheelchair. And then Benoit did it anyway because he wanted to be Dynamite Kid. And I look at a guy like Will Ospreay, who's a great wrestler, maybe the best in-ring performer in the world today. But what's the point? Because the way he works, I would bet on him ending up in a wheelchair if those odds were available at my local bookie. And that's no knock on him. Hey, he can do what he wants to do just like, you know, every other wrestler has during his career. But I think the point of the way wrestlers have disregard for themselves was also made pretty clear in the documentary.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Conan, I have a good question for you.
What it do, boom.
Have you been taking your Athletic Greens?
You know it. Love it.
Yeah. Well,
you recommended that to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Because Athletic Greens AG1, I take every day.
He was taking it before they came on board for us to promote them. But go
right.
ahead.
Because the thing, you know, I wanted better gut health, you know, for my digestion, because I'm on a weird diet, like the keto diet. I don't sometimes get enough carbs as I need. So right. I like it for the gut health and gives you sustained energy, you know, immune support. And I hated taking the I had like 9 bottles of vitamins.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, constantly having to screw the vitamins on and taking like 9 vitamins at a time, or like, you know, 2 times during the day. But you know, with AG1, it's great. You just mix it with water, or you know, you can put in juice too.
Right.
I like to take it because I do intermittent fasting. I like to take it after my workout, so I'll go drink my AG1, and I'll maybe take a protein shake and go eat my meal. And the thing about it, it's you know, it's great for recovery. You know, it empowers the whole, you know, the gut for the whole body. If your gut is in good shape and good health, that affects your whole body. You know, your alertness, you know, everything. And right. athletes love this stuff. And it's so much more than just a powder. It's literally all of your key health products in one. You know, and it's got 75 high quality ingredients, and so you get the daily nutrients that you need. And it's a micro habit that delivers macro benefits, and it helps almost everybody take care of their health every single day.
Right.
So if you want, you know, I swear by this stuff, right? Because it's so much simplicity, and it works, right? And it also just costs less than $3 a day. That's a really good price if you ask me. And if a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplement routine, then Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. So go to athleticgreens.com/Conan. That's Athletic Greens, athleticgreens.com/KONAN. And check it out. Less than $3 a day and a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs.
Bro, here's the best part of it, too. We all need, like, we all know that we need vitamins, and this thing is rich in antioxidants, vitamins, minerals. But we also know we need fresh fruits and vegetables. A lot of time it's hard, you know, you got to cut them and you got to go to the store and buy them and hope that they don't go bad. Bro, you save all of that by taking this. This is excellent. We highly recommend it. Disco, as I stated, and Joe was using it before they came on board. You know, we all use it. We all swear by it. And it saves you time. It saves you money. You don't got to, like as Disco said before, you don't got to take a bunch of pills. This has everything you need to keep you in shape. Because really, that's the MO of our show, wellness. Keeping you in shape. Get all your minerals and vitamins at Athletic Greens. Boom.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Joe, you as a fan that didn't know these guys, but as a fan, and I know you know, you probably read a lot of stuff about what happened. What surprised you or stood out to you the most when you watched this?
Well, like Mark said, I thought it was, you know, as happy an ending as you could possibly get with Chris Jericho bringing Sandra together with Chris's son, David. So that was something I was really surprised to see. Just seeing some of the like the repeated headbutts and everything like that and the chair shots he would take, you know, I've always read that Chris would never put his hands up, so you could say that that contributed to the damage. But one thing that Mark mentioned that, of course, Eddie was a big trigger maybe for what went wrong with Chris. A lot of people forget to mention, because the story is always so much about Chris and Eddie, that year Chris also lost Johnny Grunge, who was like his boy in his neighborhood in Atlanta. They always said that when Chris and Nancy had altercations or arguments, one of them would call Johnny over, and he would kind of settle the thing, or he would take Chris down to the hotel or whatever until he cooled off. So that was another guy that he lost that year that was like another part of his support system in that neighborhood that maybe, you know, maybe he felt like he had no one left to talk to.
You know, I was, it was very hard for me to watch Vicky talk. And, you know, when the son broke down, you know, all the abuse that he had taken, it was good to finally people talk about Nancy, because they never talked about her. She's actually the one that recommended me to Kevin Sullivan so I would get my job in WCW. So we were always very, very close. But I'll tell you what really, really shocked me, bro. I didn't know that he had broken her back. You know, like that really, that brutality, that level of brutality, like I didn't really know that, you know what I'm saying? That really shocked me. And his lawyer, and this was just merely by coincidence, his lawyer, who's called Kerry Ichter, and I don't know if he was the lawyer of his estate, when I had sued TNA, he was my lawyer, and he had Chris Benoit's journal, you know. And I know for a fact, and these texts weren't played on the show, that for a while Nancy thought that he was having an affair with one of the divas, and that was one of the things that was also causing a lot of heat.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Really?
I
want to point out too here is that during this period of time, as much as I recall, I wasn't really into wrestling that much. I don't think I was watching the shows on TV. I was thinking, so like when the Eddie death, you know, happened, it was like, I didn't really know what was going on. You know, I had to call people and say, you know, I hear it on the news and stuff, you know. And the same thing with Benoit. It, like, came out of nowhere because I wasn't really actively in the business that much at that point. But I want to this is what disturbed me mostly about that. And it's kind of like it just shows you, like, the progress we've made sometimes. Like, you know, like, culturally, there's this thing now where, like, you know, like the way we used to live, there's things that we shouldn't have been doing, you know, and then like the things that we did. And there was like, you know, like in this day and age, the Steiner brothers would not have been able to bully the locker room like they did, and wouldn't have been accepted like the boys used to just accept it. You know, the Steiners are bullies. That's their gimmick, just, you know, whatever. But the thing that bothered me a lot is like today, like when you hear, like, this is 15, you know, years later, which doesn't really seem like that long of a time, but it really is a long period of time, is that like how like you hear the stories of like the domestic abuse that was going on that we really, and I, let's be honest, back then, it's like if somebody like got rough with his wife, you know, we didn't really look at it like we did today. You know, like with the Me Too, it's like, it's that's a really bad thing. And I think as a, as maybe like as a locker room, like a wrestling culture, it's something that we kind of just didn't really take it seriously.
How often did we really know if a guy was abusive with his significant other?
We didn't, but you'd hear whispers. But like these days, the whispers get extrapolated, like, you know, we want to know. But we really didn't care about, like it, you know, obviously it's not a good thing, but like you hear the stories of like these guys getting, you know, they're getting rough with the, but I mean, and then again, I'm not condoning it, but you look at like Nancy, you know, she's in the business, she's kind of rough chick, you know, I'm not, and this is definitely not, I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking, that like she was in a couple of relationships that had a lot of abuse in them. And I'm not blaming her.
Yeah, but that's victim blaming or on the verge of.
But it does bother me. That's all I'm saying. That's the thing. You know, I'm not condoning what I'm saying. But that was one of the things that when they brought it up, I'm like, man, that kind of, you know, that's, you just look at things differently. You know what I'm saying?
First off, I don't know that wrestling culture's changed all that much. You talk about that nobody could bully the locker room like the Steiners used to. First off, I didn't see that as much as you guys did, but then I was an announcer. I always got along great with both those guys, except when Scotty yelled at me for calling him White Thunder. But like, look at JBL, what he did to Mauro Ranallo in WWE, bullying him, and that was just, you know, a year or so ago. I'm not sure wrestling culture is ever going to change all that much.
Probably not. You know, and but here's the thing. The problem is, like, we accepted it. Like, we didn't complain about it. You didn't bitch about the Steiners. That was like their gimmick. They're bullies. They're picking on Rey Mysterio. They're picking on, you know, it's like, and it was like, it's actually, we looked at it as kind of like humorous, you know, back then.
Well, I'll tell you one thing in the documentary, too, that really jumped out was when you saw Regal on WWE TV not put over Chris as a human being, but put him over as a wrestler. And I saw that and I go, boy, maybe he thinks something the rest of us should be thinking. Because the first thing that struck me when I heard Chris and his whole family had been quote unquote murdered, at least that was what was certainly implied on that Raw, or maybe you just assume they died of carbon monoxide poisoning, something like that. But you never thought of murder suicide that first night until you saw Regal kind of hold back in his statement on TV, because I said to myself, boy, if you're going to murder Chris Benoit and his family, that's a pretty tough job, because we all know how legitimately tough Benoit was, and nobody's tougher than a gun. But Jesus, that just sounded, I don't want to say fishy right off the bat, but like you're thinking, how could something like this happen? And I think Regal was the first guy to publicly anyway kind of sort out what might have happened in his mind.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one of the things that I'm glad about, and I didn't even know this until like yesterday when I was talking with him, but the supervising producer for this was Chavito, you know, and he basically told me that, you know, he wanted to do it because he said that we had to tell the real story because so many had twisted the truth. You know what I'm saying? And he said that when he was doing it, he felt Chris and Eddie was with him. You know,
I want to bring up points. This was something about specifically with Eddie that I found kind of fascinating. Not really fascinating, but I just thought this was interesting. Bro, look at the career path that, like, you know, like it's pretty much understood in the business that if you worked in the business and if people ask the boys in the business, you know, who were some of the greatest workers of all time, in the top five, you would probably get a consensus that Shawn Michaels and Eddie Guerrero are probably included in about 90% of professional wrestlers' top five in-ring performers of all time, right? And it's kind of,
yeah, I would say so.
It's kind of interesting to watch how their careers and the way their career path kind of mirrored each other. Shawn had substance abuse issues, got fired, literally had to go back to Memphis, work. He was out of shape and everything. Worked himself back in and went on to become, you know, the heart, one of the greatest performers ever, you know, like you're just saying, and he was a great performer before that, but he like went through that. It's interesting how Eddie went through the exact same thing. He was a great performer.
Well, yeah, but the difference was that Eddie, I mean, excuse me, Shawn always had the machine behind him. even when he had, you know, his substance abuse problems, you know, they always saw him as a bankable guy. The machine was always behind him, whereas Eddie had to swim upstream against the machine for so many years until he got to WWE.
Tell the story about when that story you told me, when he had been fired, he was trying to get back into WWE, and he worked that indie show up in Pittsburgh.
Actually, he hadn't been fired. He had been just sent home for a while because of some substance issues. And they knew they were going to bring him back because he actually kept the Intercontinental title, you know, for the however many months he was away from WWE. But he worked a independent show in Pittsburgh, one of Norm Connors' shows. And it was against CM Punk, who was just an indie guy then, but obviously really good. So Eddie said to me, you know, I went to the show. It was in Pittsburgh, in Monroeville, to be specific, a suburb. And Eddie said, listen. Remember how Eddie would speak real earnestly?
Right.
Listen.
And he put his hand on your
watch
chest.
This match.
He put his fingers on your chest sometimes to get your attention.
That's right. Exactly right. Listen, yeah. I need you to watch this match. I need you to really give me notes afterwards and tell me if I'm ready to go back. I don't know if I'm anywhere near at the level it takes to go back in. I go, okay, Eddie, I'll. He says, listen, you got to tell me. You got to tell me. And I go, okay. So the match, of course, is unbelievably good. Okay, between him and Punk. And afterwards, I go, Eddie, it was great. I mean, you're definitely ready. That was, you know, not a five-star match, but, you know, it was really good. And all your timing, all your stuff, it's there. He goes, you're sugarcoating it. He goes, I don't want you to sugarcoat it. I count on you to tell me the truth. Tell me. I go, Eddie, it was really good. And his voice is rising. He keeps saying, don't sugarcoat it. I need you. And I finally go, Eddie, why are you yelling? And he, like, cracked up and hugged me and said, but are you sure it was good? And that, to me, was Eddie in a nutshell. I will always remember interacting with Eddie because, you know, he was so good and his own worst critic. And Eddie kind of liked to get mad. I always got that impression from him, but he would go the extra mile for anybody. I say to this day that Eddie Guerrero is one of the best human beings I've ever met.
Here's one thing I never saw from those two guys. And maybe because I didn't travel with them, you know, because like they get in the car and they're like, you know, they're talking with whoever they're driving and stuff. I never knew about how self-critical they were of each of themselves. Like when Chris told that story where, you know, he like Benoit missed a move or something, like just did one thing, you know, took a bump when Jericho did a spin kick and he didn't touch him, but he still took the bump. And he said it bothered him so much that he self-punished himself by doing the squats. I didn't talk a lot of wrestling angles. If I worked those guys a few times, and every single time I worked, that we would just go over the stuff. We'd be on the same page, and it was good matches. There was nothing just typical wrestling. We'd go hug after, you know, we never had a discussing thing. Is like we never screwed anything up. But I only wrestled them probably like. Combined between the two, maybe 12 to 14 times, right? So I never saw that. And I wondered, did you ever, like before, like you heard that story, did you ever hear any stories of like those guys being like how they like to punish themselves when they felt they didn't do well or stuff? Because that was news to me. Nobody?
No, I never heard anything like that.
I mean, Eddie was a little more open than Chris. Like, you know, Chris was more reserved. I knew Eddie could be very self-critical, but not to the point of doing squats to punish himself after a match. But those two guys were just masters of their craft, and they expected the best from themselves and from each other. And I think that carried through to the other guys they hung out with, like Chavito and Malenko and so forth. They were just they were pro wrestlers to the bone. They were lifers. I don't think either of those guys ever thought of doing anything else. Like, but that's kind of common with wrestlers, I think. I don't think a lot of wrestlers, that's the impression I got the 8 years I spent working in wrestling. Most wrestlers, you know, except for the failed legitimate athletes like Luger, who turned to wrestling after, you know, washing out in football, I think most wrestlers are lifers from the time they were kids.
Right.
It's funny, I wasn't, but I was the exception. But let me tell you Eddie was very, you know, when I heard that thing about Benoit, the first thing I thought, that's probably that dojo mentality, because, you know, he was into Japanese dojo, and I think that's where he got that from. I knew Eddie, obviously, way better than Benoit, even though I actually met Benoit before I met Eddie. But
really?
Yeah, because I met Benoit when I wrestled in Stampede, and that was my first territory outside of Mexico. And then I met Eddie. But anyways, was I telling you? Yes, yeah, so I think Benoit got that from that dojo mentality. Eddie was more the type of guy that would beat himself up mentally, you know, and make sure that, that he got things right. But he was a perfectionist.
Yeah,
no question. And one thing that I want to put out about the documentary, too, and just the aftermath, because it's certainly really talked about. I mean, we're talking about it now, and there were a million reviews. And I wrote a column about it for my newspaper here in Pittsburgh. People can access it at triblive.com, talking about, you know, how much I liked Eddie and Chris and all the memories, good and bad, that the documentary brought back. And, you know, I got a bunch of tweets and people posting, you know, on the message board below the column, well, how can you glorify a murderer? I'm not glorifying a murderer. I said in the article that, you know, the stuff that Benoit did in murdering Nancy and Daniel was unexplainable and unforgivable. But I refuse to erase my good memories of Chris Benoit because of what happened. Okay. And I'm fully aware of what happened. And Nancy was my friend, too. But I just can't erase Chris. And I know WWE kind of had to.
Mark.
But I just refuse to do it. And I don't like to be expected to do it either.
Well, here's a problem that people have and they don't understand. And it's like anything else. It's the proximity to the emotion that you have. People on the outset that didn't know them look at this as what it is, a heinous murder. We look at it as a guy that we saw every single week, because there's not one guy you've seen in any single interview that says anything different. And we all knew the same guy. Chris came to work, was intense, was very reserved, very professional, super cool guy. You never saw him lose his temper. You never saw him get mad. Yeah, maybe he did do that in private, you know, like most of us do. Everybody has a face that they put on at work and another one you have at home and another one you give to your friends, whatever. We all have like different facades, if you will. But at the end of the day, here's a guy that we all had an emotional attachment to. And I'll tell you one of the emotional attachments I had with him. When I was in Impact, I was, you know, I was having problems there. So I actually went to WWE for an announcer's tryout. And I remember I went in there and Benoit was outside and he was like, what are you doing here? And are you getting hired? And I go, no, I came here for an announcer's tryout. And he said, all right. So I went in, I did the announcer's tryout with a coachman. I was probably in there probably about 30 to 40 minutes. And when I came out, Chris was sitting outside at a table and he came up and he hugged me and he goes, bro, that was excellent. I go, you were listening to all that? He goes, yeah, bro, I heard. I go, you're for sure you're going to get the job. And I just thought that was very cool of him that he sat there all that time listening. And that was how Chris was. So it's very hard for us that had that emotional attachment to them that they don't, you know what I'm saying, to forget that part of Chris.
Well, yeah. I mean, nobody thinks your friend's going to murder his family.
Right.
I mean, you never see that coming. My story about Chris in that regard, and Conan, you were a part of this. Whenever, you know, all the radicals decided to leave WCW and go to WWE, there was this big showdown meeting with, I think, Bill Bush and Kevin Sullivan. I'm not mistaken. Besides the guys who left, Conan, you and Shane Douglas went in there too, right?
Right.
And Benoit came up to me because everybody knew the meeting was going to happen. He goes, hey, you should go in there with us. If we leave, you should come with us. Wow. I go, what? And he goes, well, you think about this the same way we do. I know you agree with, you know, our vision for what we should be doing. And I just go, Chris, I go, it really means a lot that you said that WWE just wouldn't want me. Right. But like, that was like how Benoit was and Eddie too. And really all you guys with me, because let's face it, I came in as a total outsider, you know, a dirt sheet guy, which it took Sting 7 years to get over, might I add. Right. But you know, everybody just made me feel like I was really part of it. And Chris, in that moment, really did. I mean, I don't know if he thought that legitimately or just wanted to make me feel good, or if that was his way of saying goodbye before he went to WWE, but it was a really nice thing for him to do.
No, I think we knew him all well enough. You know, he respected what you did, bro. You were good at what you did, and you brought something to the table, and he probably wanted to...
Don't put him over. We're not going to put him over
the super genius.
Okay. let me ask you guys this, if you would agree with this. These are some things about Chris that like, people don't know and stuff, and all that, but just what I got. It's just minor little things. But wasn't it funny how, like, because he was so intense and because he was so reserved, that when he would laugh... He had like the loudest laugh in the room. You know, like he would just like crap. Like when he would laugh, like he would like just like like an explosion would come out of him. Like he would just like just crack. There was a scene, I'll never forget this.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Back when Raw was starting to kick our ass, I remember back in the back, man, I don't know if you were announcing at the time, you may have been, but we would sit in the back, and if we were in a place that had like a locker room, if there was a TV, we would have Raw on, right? So if we would be in the locker room watching Raw. Well,
yeah, I was doing TV at that time. Yeah.
Okay, so we would be back in the locker room watching Raw. I'll never forget this. Do you remember the vignette where they did the Beaver Cleaver character, where the guy
Beaver
was
Cleavage.
Beaver Cleavage, right? Bro, that first vignette that aired, like literally, there was probably like seven of us watching this, and basically the gist of the vignette is like this guy is like, you know, having sex with his mom. Cause like the mom had like big tits, and she was like he's little beaver, like whatever the innuendo was. When that was over, Chris let out the biggest laugh I've ever heard in my entire. I mean, he was just cracking up and like couldn't stop laughing and everything and all that. And I'll never get that. Flair was there too. Okay, Flair looks at me and he says, "It's over." It's like talking about, like, because they were kicking around. Because there was like, oh, let's watch that vignette. And like, Benoit was just cracking up and flirting to me, goes, "It's over."
It's like, geez, bro, listen to this, Mark. This will give people, it's just a small little thing, but just how intense Chris was. I had just gotten off this tricep operation, and I was ready to start working out. And it was kind of like on a Wednesday, and I was like, "Yo, Chris, I'm going to start working out again on Monday, get back into shape." He goes, "Why don't you start tomorrow? I'll go with you." And I was like, "No, I'll wait till Monday." But he was that intense. Like, why wait 4 days when you can start tomorrow, you know? And I'll go with you, you know?
How about this, too? The one thing that people like, you know, everybody like fans, you have a visual picture, like you're obviously a negative visual picture of Chris Benoit, but like if your memories of him from watching on TV, you have this visual picture, right? And, you know, he's obviously intense, you know, everything. Bro, the funniest thing is like what people do not know is like that guy is like when he would go out with us, bro, what was Conan, what do you remember was like, what was Chris's favorite place? To go out,
the club in Disney that played
Backtracks
where they played 80s music. Yeah,
80s music. Yeah. Bro, if you could take your visual picture of Chris Benoit and then show him at 8-Track,
yeah,
bro, he would dance for like just like we'd be there 2-3 hours. he would be sitting there on the dance floor with his head bobbing for 2 to 3 hours straight, just like having the best time of his life. He just loved it. So that's one thing that people don't know. Chris Benoit loved disco music.
He did.
It was hysterical.
One of my favorite Benoit stories personally was after a show one time, Chris Lake grabbed me, literally grabbed me, and goes, "Hey, tonight you're going to hang with me and Nancy, and you're going to match us drink for drink and pill for pill, and we'll see if you can hang with us." Wow. So I went out with him. After like 60 minutes, I went to the bathroom and never came back. I did the Irish exit. It was an hour and I could barely stand. I go, "This can just lead to no good," so I got out of there.
What is the Irish exit? Not paying for your bill?
No, the Irish exit is when you say you're going to the bathroom and just leave.
Yeah, and you don't say goodbye to anyone.
That's Teddy Hart, okay? He ain't afraid to just say, "Hey, I got to go to the bathroom," and then you don't see him for like 2 or 3 days and you ended up paying his bill.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, put it this way. If I didn't pay my bill, that got even for the time in Vegas disco. I know you remember this. When Benoit pickpocketed my credit card and ran it up to the limit for the drinks for everybody.
We're just at the MGM?
Yeah, but MGM is that Betty Boo Bar. Yeah. He gave it back to me the next day, and he goes, "Hey, you're one of the boys. We rib each other all the time."
Bro, let me just say, Mike, Mark, there's no way this scene is happening today in 2020 in any promotion. But
no, it's not.
Explain the scene, if you can, your disco to people that are, you know, wouldn't know what that Betty Boop looked like at night when we were in there.
It was an absolute circus act. It was this big circular bar, and it was packed with the boys, and it was packed with rats, and it was packed with marks. It was just incredible.
Right. Bro, remember when Ron Jeremy was just randomly there like a mark to want to take pictures with the wrestlers?
remember when Jaromir Jagr showed up?
Jagr was there. When was this at?
Jagr was a big junkie gambler. He would spend like the entire summer in Vegas at MGM. So he was walking through the casino, and I saw him, and he came over, and like Jericho was there, and Mr. Irvin was there. Teddy Irvin was there, and Benoit was there, and he came and he sat down for like half an hour. And Jagr said to Mr. Irvin, "What teams did you play for?" Because Jagr was getting ready to go into free agency, which actually he never did reach, but at the time it looked like he would. And Mr. Irvin goes, "St. Louis, Los Angeles, and the Rangers." And Jagr goes, "Oh, well, two of those teams can afford me." And it was just crazy, the people that would wander in and out of there, because it was always like shoulder to shoulder, absolutely packed.
Right. And the thing is, when Mark says a circus, he's not kidding. You saw everything there from pimps, hoes, strippers, people dressed up as wrestlers, you know, movers, shakers.
I got another funny Benoit story. Benoit would kind of like use his, you know how like you like to work, some of the boys like to work the boys in the back, you know, and stuff and all that. So Benoit, like at the time, was like he was still just like a mid-card guy, but he was moving up on the card now. And you could see eventually they were going to try and get him into the mix with the top guys, right? Because there definitely was that, just for everybody that knows, you know, back in the day, we had what we called the top, was it top 12 or 13, Mark? The top 12 guys that were like icon over, you know, you talk Piper, Macho, Flair, Hogan.
Oh boy, you know, I don't know how many there were, but there definitely was kind of a glass ceiling. Yeah,
me and Jericho went over the list. It was either 12 or 13, whatever it was, because we forgot to include Goldberg. Okay, but Benoit was trying to get into that mix, right? I'll never get this. So he was, and you know, Bagwell and Lex were always, you know, it was just the two of them. They were buddy. Sting would be with them too sometimes, but Bagwell and Luger were like always, like, you know, and Luger was always politicking, you know, something. So Bagwell was kind of like politicking with the residual heat from Luger because they were together and stuff. So Benoit was supposed to be wrestling Bagwell on a show, right? And I think it's a TV taping. And I'm going to give you the preamble to this. I assume what happened that led me up to this when I saw Bagwell. But I guess Benoit, like Bagwell, you know, Bagwell was one of those guys. You know, Benoit was a guy that, like, when you had a match with him, he didn't really want to talk all day about it. Like, he would get with you not too, you know, pretty close to the show. Like, he don't want to talk about your match 4 hours ahead of time. It'd be like, you know, a show's coming, hey, just, you know. So Bagwell was doing the, you know, I guess Bagwell, because he never worked with Benoit, but we all had worked with Benoit, and you know how he operates. He just kind of disappears, and when he's ready to go over the match, before, you know, whatever, he'll go over with you, right? And plus, we called a lot in the ring back then, too. So we didn't have to script, you know, every single thing, you know, top to bottom and stuff. So,
well, except for Paige.
Except for Paige. So basically, Bag, but Benoit was doing the same thing he does with everybody else. Just didn't want to, like, Bagwell kept, would want to go to, and he would just give him the cold shoulder. Bagwell interpreted that as that, like, something might be going down in the match. And I go to Bagwell, put over to Bagwell, bro, he's taping his fists before the match. I'm like, what are you doing? I go, he goes, and he's like looking at me, like Luger's there. He goes, bro, you don't know what's going on here? I'm like, no. He goes, I might have to fight tonight. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, Benoit's fucking with you. And I'm like, are you sure? You know, and like Luger's there and everything, and he's taping his fist because, you know, Benoit was playing.
You know, Luger's stirring that pot like crazy.
Not even that. Those guys would work other people, but now they were getting worked, and Benoit knew that since he had them hooked, he was just going to milk this thing for all his worth, because he would get off on that. That was like, you know, he liked jokingly fucking with guys. If he knew he had you and had you, like, intimidated or something, he would play with it until it came down, and then you just do, because, like he would do that to, like, the times we worked. I'd be like, hey, and he would just kind of, like, he'd intentionally, like, kind of, like, walk away from me and not say anything. Like, hey, you want to go over this? And he would just turn around and walk away. And I could do his thing and stuff. All right, you know. So, but like when he was time to go over it, let's go over the match, he'd be very professional and do business. But the one thing that you noticed, Madden, that I never noticed until you had talked about it, like I'd always see him, you know, drinking coffee, right? He had a shirt of that. And that was the thing to me. It's like I was like shocked at like, if there was something, like, I'm not saying this is like something that would have caused Benoit to do it, or like we never knew anything. But one thing that I did know is that it was unusual to me that I've never seen a human being drink that much coffee. Like he would
before the day of the show, he would walk, like, you know how all the hockey arenas have like the runway underneath the concourse beneath right. The stands, it's this big circle, and Benoit would, and see, I would walk around it myself just to walk, you know, because I'm a big fat so, and I need to walk where I can. So I would walk around it, and I noticed that Benoit, like almost every day, would walk like an endless lap under the concourse. He'd always stop at the coffee pot every pass and fill it up. It was like drinking an endless cup of coffee, and he would be wearing, almost without fail, no shirt and his dress slacks.
Right.
And he would just walk underneath. Glenn, am I right? I pointed it out. You saw it.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't notice that until you said, like, yeah, that's what he did. But the funniest thing was, like, somebody would say, ask you, hey, where's Benoit? What would you tell him?
I would say, go to the coffee pot. He'll be there.
And not only that, bro, he always had, just like Scott had that toothpick in his mouth, he always had that coffee straw in his mouth, right?
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, chewing the coffee straw, yeah. Drinking coffee. It was
chewing,
like
the coffee. Oh,
yeah. But I never knew like that is what he was doing, because I wouldn't just walk around the concourse like you did. Like, you noticed that was pretty funny.
Well, yeah, and the one time to take that story to another to a conclusion. One time there was a three-way between Benoit, Raven, and Paige. On Nitro, and you know how Paige liked to lay everything out, and Benoit pointedly did not, correct?
Right, of course not.
So Paige had this script, and he was looking for Benoit, and I actually told him, well, just wait by the coffee pot. And then, of course, I waited by the coffee pot because I had to see what would happen. So Benoit, sure enough, comes by, and Paige goes up to him with the script. Benoit doesn't break stride. He grabs the script, rips it like 50 pieces, and just keeps walking.
That's the first time that I really found out that he had a script, a DDP, because Benoit told me about it. And he was like, can you believe that this guy wrote stuff down? No, bro. I mean, you know how DDP is. He's very like, what would be the word? Just very passionate about everything that he did. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To the point.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I can't criticize that, Conan, yeah. But sometimes it went a bit too far. Like in WWE, they pointedly told him in that match with Undertaker, Hunter pointedly told him, do not go to Undertaker with a script. And sure enough, the next thing Hunter knows, he's looking across catering, and Paige is sitting there showing a script to Undertaker.
Jeez.
What a shame.
This is What do you? I mean, Chris and Eddie, like how long were Chris and Eddie like best friends? Like, when did their friendship start? Like how long did were they like tight?
I think that dates back to ECW, right, Conan?
No, I think Japan, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Pegasus Kid and Black Tiger, for sure. That's when it started.
That's right, and that's like in 1980. I didn't realize Chris was that far ahead of me. He was like in Japan in like the late 80s. I mean I broke in like 94, 95. Like I got or 92, but I mean 95 was in WCW. That's like starting to get good. I didn't know he was that far ahead of me because I think we were the same age.
Like I said, those guys were such lifers. They wrestled when they were teenagers. Like when Eddie passed, I think he was 38, and Chris was I think 40. But if you look back at their careers, it seemed like they should have been much older because they really did start so young. It's like Sean Waltman. He never seemed to age because he started when he was literally, I think, 16.
Yeah, and he's like, never really changed, right?
Right.
Except from the mullet to the curly hair. The curly long hair is about the only thing. So, oh, my God. What was I going to say here?
I think, let me just say this. I think at the end, you guys, when I try to, like, put everything together, like, we'll never really know how much CTE he had because, from what I understand, when they finally went to the house to get him, like, his brain was kind of decomposed because, you know, it had been there for a couple of days, and it was, like, during the summer. But I also saw where the guy was pointing out, the guy that worked with Novinsky, that they had that he had tail proteins in his brain, which obviously was to be expected. But I do think that Eddie passing away, not like Joe said, not having the support system of grunge there, the fact that, you know, he was writing in a journal, you know, when that Vicky caught him, you know, laying in Eddie's bed, you know, he had a big part of him left when Eddie left. And then I think that once he started to become distant and start acting irrationally by taking different ways home and all the other things we all know about, and then getting into fights with Nancy and reading some of these texts where she's telling him to be a man and he's 44 years old and now they're fighting and maybe she thinks there's some infidelity, you know, just led him to crack.
How about this? What do you think about this? What if, like, Chris, because he had problems, you know, like maybe he had, you know, maybe he was starting to show signs of CTE. Maybe, you know, he was having problems at home with Izzy, you know, stuff. What if he lost the only people he could talk to about that stuff? You know, what if Eddie was like one of the only guys that he could confide in? Because he didn't really, bro, Benoit didn't have like a lot of people that he was like open with and stuff. And then, like, Eddie was his best friend. It's like, what if that's just like the fact that he couldn't talk to people about his problems anymore, especially with grunge passing and stuff. Everything, it's just all that stuff inside him that he would like to share with people to get out. It just all erupted at one time, you know.
Well, especially when he was very reserved to begin with.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'm just surprised he didn't talk to Nancy about it because she was like one of the boys, so she would have, you know, understood and probably been able to talk.
No. My problem is, what if he was having problems with Nancy and he can't talk to Nancy about it? Eddie was his guy, his confidant. Yeah. He could, you always talk about his problems too. And it's like, you know, like you really missed, like, you know, maybe that's why it hit him so hard.
Well, he had,
it's like, shit, it's like losing my mom or my dad. Cause those are, you know, like the person I talked to that I confide everything. And I don't have that person anymore. You know?
You know who said that they talked to Chris that Thursday night before it happened, Friday and Saturday or whatever? And I'd never heard this before. It was Shane Helms.
Oh, really?
He said he talked to him Thursday night because I do his podcast, and he mentioned it and said that someday he'll cover it, but he's never, like, told the story before what they talked about. But he said it got really deep and emotional and everything, so things were going on just, you know, that Thursday before.
Oh. Well, give me some last thoughts, Disco, on Chris and Eddie.
It's... For Eddie, the guy, the both of them that they may have, I've never met two guys that like worked as hard as they did in the ring, like every night, worked hard outside the ring, took a lot of punishment, took a lot, like, it's like, you know, like their heart and their body, they, because they were so driven in what they did, they never realized that they had to give themselves a rest. And it's like, I think the fact that those two guys never gave themselves a rest, like never slowed down, never like, you know, like, bro, these guys would, you know, just work in a, you know, you go on house shows, those guys work hard for 15, 16 just minutes on nights, you know, like hard, doing a lot of stuff, you know, very, very physical and stuff. And they'd go home, you know, they'd work out every day. You know, put stress here, but they'd go home. When they went home, back to the thing, they'd still work out hard. They'd do, they're doing squats. They're doing, you know, Chris is in the arena doing 200, 300 squats sometimes. It's like extra and something that it just shows you, like, you can work yourself to death sometimes. That the other factors that go with working your body and your mind and your heart so hard and never giving a chance to rest, it can break you down. And I mean, in my opinion, that's what I think happened to those two guys, is that they just never really stepped back and gave themselves a rest because they were so driven and so passionate about what they did.
Yeah. How about you, Mark?
Well, both those guys, like Glenn sort of said just now, they cornered the market on passion, work ethic, and accountability. Those were two guys, whenever something went wrong, they accepted their share in what went wrong, and in fact, more than their share of what went wrong. Glenn brings up a good point in terms of...
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Looking at Eddie specifically, because, you know, I probably knew Eddie a bit better than I knew Chris, and Eddie was so self-critical, you know, in conversations I had with him. You know, who reminds me a lot of Eddie is Sidney Crosby, the Penguin star, who's now 32. And he's the hardest working athlete I've ever been around. And actually, Eddie and Chris are right there in that category with him. But Sid's at the age now where I don't know if he realizes that maybe rest will do him more good than the extra workouts. And I think a lot of athletes who are traditional hard workers know when to pull back. And I don't think Chris and Eddie ever knew when to pull back. And whether that, you know, hastened what happened with either of them, I don't know. I rather doubt it with Eddie. I think maybe with Chris. But I think athletes have to, you know, understand when they're, you know, 32 or 42 or whatever. It's not the same as when they're 22. And they need to change the way they do things.
Yeah. How about you, Joe?
I just remember as a fan that having that series of tragedies all in a row kind of pushed me away from watching for a while, you know, because when you look at it from an outsider's perspective, it looks like Disco said, these guys worked themselves so hard that maybe it contributed to their early demise. And as a fan, then that's how you look at the business. Like, geez, these guys are putting themselves through so much and everything. And it's kind of, I don't know, it became kind of depressing to be a fan at that time, having to be, you know, watch these guys for a decade or more, and now they're both gone because maybe they pushed themselves so hard and it affected them so much physically and mentally. I don't know. It just pushed me away at that time.
It's the only physical thing we do, like, it's not, we'll call it a sport because we do things that athletes do. Still, they don't have an off season, literally.
Like, yeah, there's, and maybe you have that, or maybe a rotating off season where each guy gets X amount of time off. But you know, just in closing, I miss those guys. I mean, when they went to WWE and WWE would come to Pittsburgh, I'd always, you know, make it a point to at least see them, you know, the day of the show for a couple minutes. And I remember the last story I'm going to tell is one time I was in the front row at a WWE show that both Chris and Eddie were on in Pittsburgh, just a house show. And they were in a tag match, and they kept a running conversation going with me during the match in the front row, which was funny then, even funnier now.
You know, I tell you what, bro, you know, as you know, very, very, very close with Eddie. Met him when he was 19. I would always go down to Juarez, which is on the border of El Paso. And he would come over I would cross over the border. He'd pick me up. We'd go do weights. We'd go to his house. He'd teach me. We were always together, bro. And in Mexico too. And he was always trying to get me into WWE. Always looking out for me. A big part of me really just left when he passed away. 99.9% of 100% of all my interactions with Chris Benoit were always positive. That was very hard for me to accept what he did. I think the only thing that would piss me off is if you were going to do something, why did you take Nancy and your own son? Just take your own life. You know what I'm saying? But we don't know what he was dealing with. And at the end of the day, bro, I'm glad that, you know, I was able to work and meet both of them because they both left indelible impressions on my life forever. You know, very, very, very sad tragedy.
Look at all you guys on TV.
Yeah, you guys.
What a fucking crew this is.
Well, the funniest thing is, right, is we always used to do this by phone because whenever we tried to do video, it was just very uncomfortable. Like, we would look at each other like, well, let's just do it by phone. But then all of a sudden on our Patreon, there's a market for people that want to watch the video version of the show. Yeah, sure. So I was like, all right, we'll start doing it. Now we're comfortable doing it. So, but when we first started doing it, it's like, nah, let's go back to doing a phone.
Looks good to me.
JR, make sure you tell Rafael hi for me, the Cuban War Horse.
Yeah, he's my Silvio Dante.
Yes, he has a little bit of heat with me though, even though he's Cuban, because he's a New York Yankee fan, and he lets me know whenever the Red Sox don't do well. But he makes up for it because he likes the Celtics. JR, how boring is it watching SportsCenter now with no sports?
It's interesting to see how they're programming it. I kind of look at it from a perspective of what are you guys going to give us next, you know? So, but it's not easy. I watched, what day was it? Sunday, I guess. I watched the 17-inning Oklahoma women's softball game against Florida in the College World Series. 17 frigging innings. Now, I was at the game. I was there. Wow. And I had never seen it back. So there's where I am right now. I told somebody today, I did an interview. I said, God damn, man, I need roller derby. Just give me a roller derby marathon. How would that do right now? A whole new audience. You heard of it. You never seen it. Boy, somebody's missed an opportunity. I'm going to try to book a roller derby.
And everybody would be tweeted about Miss Georgia Haas.
Right. Or everybody wants to talk about that idiot that they think's from Oklahoma, that exotic Joe, or whatever his name is.
Joe Exotico, he's tremendous. Right. Do you know him? He's from that's your neck of woods.
No, I think he's a Texan. It's snuck across the Red River. That's what I think. he reminds me of an unsuccessful, rarely booked when he was young wrestler, who now is an older, out of shape, independent wrestler who still can't get booked and can't figure out why. Right. So I'll just start hanging with these. I got a gay compound. Nothing wrong with that. That's your call. Right. And all these crazy ass animals. How do you know what went on down there? God almighty. I used to drive by there all the time to Dallas, right off I-35. So, I got friends that have gone. Now they're embarrassed to talk about it.
What a character that guy is, right?
Oh, man, you couldn't artistically, creatively design that son of a bitch any better than he is. He's one of a kind. He's cringeworthy to watch, but he's one of those deals. You can't take your eyes off the crazy son of a gun.
Oh, yeah, he's a car accident. Right? It's, you know, it's like a mixture of Kenny Powers and an indie wrestler from, you know, from Memphis or something.
That's about right.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, JR, because I was thinking about this the other day. Because obviously, when you're booking, you're always trying to find stuff that you know, other people haven't done, or something that's so old that now it's new, right?
Yeah.
And what are some of the things from the past that we don't do anymore that you think that if we still did today, they'd get over?
Well, I can tell you that one of the things that nobody was doing, and I suggested Tony Khan there at AEW that we do, right, is have time limits.
Right.
Because as a booker, having a time limit gives you a viable additional finish.
Right.
And having a draw is new in wrestling again. And having a draw is accepted, a tie, a draw, whatever, is accepted in the nomenclature of sports in general. You know, so I know, hey, look, well, baseball didn't have tie. Well, I get it. But there are ties in a lot of games. And there's, you know, soccer games, nil-nil, one-to-one. So I just think that was something that we could do that was very simplistic, and then we're doing that. So that's one thing for sure. And the other thing is, we don't trust our own creativity and the talent's ability to get over by letting things have a more deliberate pace, so the roots have more time to get embedded into the psyche of the customer or the viewer. And because everybody's in a hurry now. So instead of having a 6-month program or a year program, you say, well, you couldn't do that nowadays. Right. You could if it was good.
Right.
Of course you could if it was good.
Right.
So
let me give you an example. Our biggest storyline last year was an undercard, like romance, right? And this thing took a whole year, and it ended up in a hair match. So you can do it. And that's, you're right. That's one of the problems we have today. You have all these microwave, you know, feuds, you know. Right. You forget about them. They have no, like you said, you can't embed emotional roots into the psyche because it's over before it began.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
People have to have time to process. And we have to realize in this crazy business, no matter what our lot in life or the wrestling life is that people have more to do than just watch wrestling. So having a longer, more defined, I can process this story, a processable piece of creativity is what you're always looking for. And I believe that fans will stay hooked nowadays. I just think they're longing for a better product. And, you know, we were doing really well. AEW wise, I felt like we're starting to get there with a whole new team in every area, every single phase of what we were doing. Everybody was working together for the first time by and large. There's a few exceptions. Raphael's one, Keith Mitchell's one, you know, the guys that I knew.
Dirty
I
Keith with. Too. Yeah.
So we were, but then this damn virus came along, man. And these empty things, you know, I'm not going to fly for 2 weeks. Tony Khan called me last week, said, I'm worried about you getting exposed to this thing. You're in the high-risk group. You can't get sick. And I appreciate that. I don't know that anybody else has said that to me in that regard. But they're going to be sending me things for me to voice over here. So I'm going to stay involved to some degree, but not as much as I would like, and I'm not going to be on the road. For me to get to Jacksonville, for example, from Oklahoma City, that's 2 airplanes and 3 airports, Oklahoma City, Dallas, and Jacksonville. I'm 68 years old, so I'm stupid to get on these tubes of germs,
right,
all the time.
Right. And go ahead.
So I'm missing the work in that respect. I'm missing going, getting out of the house. But hell, ain't we all? Aren't we all stir crazy, for God's sakes? Poor JR. Oh my God, poor JR. So what I'm doing, I'm immersing myself in promoting my book. It comes out on Tuesday. So
Joe read it. He's got it right in front of us here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Somehow I ordered it from Walmart, and they sent it to me last week. I got it on Friday, so.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you a question. One of the main differences that I see, JR, when I'm watching AEW and I watch WWE specifically, is obviously the promos in AEW are more organic, and they just sound that way, and they come out better. Whose idea was it, or when did it start, or when did this transition start in WWE? Because I'm assuming you were there. Where they just said, okay, let's start scripting everything.
I would say, I don't think it was at the beginning of the Attitude Era, but I think somewhere subsequently to that, the writing people became more prominent. There are more of them. And so they're footing up duties. This guy's going to write a promo for this guy. It became very compartmentalized, like we were Disney.
Right.
And Vince wants to envision himself as a Disney company. That's cool. Hey, he's making more money than anybody else, so he's doing all right. But bottom line is that the more writers they hired, the more jobs they had to find for them to do. And some of them were just writing promos and using their own personal imagination. I say that sometimes a kid that's 22 or 23 years old, and one of his first jobs out of college, who's actually never been in a fight, who's never played in an athletic contest, who's never had the shit knocked out of him, is a little bit challenging to write for somebody that's a live, living being that's standing in front of you. I'd rather, what we do is, the guys will get bullet points, but basically, we don't have any writers. We have zero in AEW. So what you hear, good or bad, oh, that's not a good promo. That was a good promo. It's because it's a talent. It's a talent deal. And I think that's, I think fans like that, Carlos. It's just basically the same deal, man. It's back to the old days a little bit. How many promos did you do that weren't scripted? Thousand? Thousands?
Everybody's, me?
Yeah.
No, I've been very lucky because the way I talk, nobody can really write for me. So they've always given me like a lot of leeway, but I'm definitely like in the one, you know what I'm saying?
You should create your own material. That's what you guys are doing here today. You're creating content. And I think that's what you ask the talents to do. Hey, look, you get paid a good buck. You're working one day a week. Come on. You can't think about your promo.
Right. So JR, let me get this right then. So back then it's like, they just randomly just started hiring a bunch of writers, and everybody's sitting back saying, like, hey, what do we need all these writers for? And they're basically saying, well, we got all these writers that need to write. And so they just said, is that how kind of it worked? They just hired them, and so because they hired them and they needed something to do, they just started writing the promos?
It seemed like that the guys were, after Russo and Ferrara left, that's when the proliferation of the influx of writers came to be. And they all got assigned different tasks. This one's going to work on Raw. This one's going to work on SmackDown. So now once you get to your brand, what are you going to do? Well, you're not going to be the booker, even though they try to be booking. They try to come up with booking ideas. So you got to take the existing booking that's been created and then make promos for it and help these guys as best you can. So that's how that came about, Disco. It was just crazy stuff. And it made everybody feel like we were a big entertainment company. And it's trying to leave the wrestling company aspect farther and farther behind. And I thought that was a mistake because you can't leave your core product, man. You can't.
Well, let me tell you what I feel like. I get the, and tell me if you get this feeling too. It's because they put, like you described, the typical writer, 22, 23-year-old kid, first job, you know, never been in a fight, you know, hasn't slept with a lot of girls and stuff. But what I always got out of this, when they started scripting the promos, because most of the writers and like half the guys in the business these days are huge comic book marks, the conversations that the wrestlers were having were conversations that you'd read like comic book characters having. You know, comic book characters are not real people. They're comic book characters. So it's like I always got that vibe. I was like, boy, I bet you all these guys are comic book marks. This is what the show sounds like. Do you get that feeling?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. I feel bad for the talent more than anything. Yeah. I don't get angry at the writers for trying to do their job. They got hired to do something they weren't qualified to do sometimes. We've all been there, I guess, in our lifetimes. But I felt bad for the talents. I see the gleam in the talent's eye when they get a promo on AEW because they can create something. They can have a hand in their future. They can have a hand in building their persona. Every smart booker I ever worked for, including and starting with Cowboy Bill Watts, when he hired talent, he always wanted to make sure when he hired top talent that they knew they were coming in and they were going to help book their program. Because anytime a guy's got some of his own skin in the game, he's going to work hard to make it work. Plus, they tell you what they can do. They know what they do best. And so to me, it was just a natural progression of how Watts did it. And now we're doing it. You know, Tony Khan's been very influenced by Bill Watts and other NWA and old school wrestling. So now we're kind of back in that world.
Bro, and it's kind of funny, Jim, because I kind of work that way also. I find out who are my good talkers. I don't got to write nothing for them, okay?
Right.
These guys don't talk that well. I got to help them talk. These guys are real smart. Give me an idea that you want to do. So now they feel like something isn't being forced upon them, and they're more open to everything because it's their idea. But one of the problems that we have is that, and you've seen this, Jim, is a lot of bookers, they're afraid that if the idea isn't theirs – and somebody else is going to get a credit, and they're afraid for their job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they don't want any ideas to come through if it isn't theirs, or they'll steal it.
Rampant insecurity and paranoia has been in my psyche since 1974 when I first walked into a pro wrestling locker room. Who's that guy? Who's the new kid? What's that? That's the other referee. Is he taking your spot? Paranoia.
Or how about this one, Jim? When you go backstage to visit your friends, he's probably here trying to get a job. No?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People, yeah.
Let me tell you something, because I've worked another job since I've been out of wrestling, right? And I always used to say that there's two people in the business, the ones that want to do their job and the ones that want to keep their job. And I always thought that was just like professional wrestling until I got another job. And there's like in my job, there's people that want to do their job and people that want to keep their job. And it's like, I think it's just like human nature. And we see it on that, like in professional wrestling, we see it on that level that guys would rather that, you know, just try to save their spot. And it's that attitude amongst the top guys produced some good business back in the day, you know, where guys were very trying to get more and trying to get more. But like these days when it's like, we're kind of like all this together and we got to figure out how to get like the wrestling popularity back up to where it used to be. We got to change our philosophy. You know, I mean, did you listen to Chael Sonnen's rant recently on Raw that he had that?
No. Okay. I like Chael though. It was great, bro.
I do too. And let me give you a point what he said. And you tell me if this is a problem that you see. I know it's a problem that you see. It's a problem I see. Anybody that's been in the business when we were successful and heard the crowds back in the day and the crowds today, that's different. But what we have today is when you have two guys cutting a promo and they're you want to put across like there's going to be violence, and then they're going in the ring and they're not fighting. They're performing, you know, like two guys. And I think that we see that it's very difficult to sell feuds to people if the wrestlers are just going to go out there and just like, you know, like you see it more often than not. People can't punch anymore. We used to get mileage out of a punch and a bump, you know, and stuff. And then I mean, guys, Austin and Brett would brawl. Rock and Austin would brawl. You know, Curtis, they'd be brawling. It's like we've taken that element out. And I honestly think that the fact that all the matches are scripted from head to toe, even though the promos aren't scripted, the matches, everybody in the business scripts their match today, that we've taken a lot of the call in the ring stuff, a lot of the organic stuff, a lot of the basics, we've taken that out and replaced it with trying to fit 24 ounces into a 12-ounce can each match, and just all these kickouts of all these false finishes and all these devastating moves. I think when people try to engage in this product that used to watch it, it's just too busy for them. It's like it's not a simple product anymore with good guy versus bad guy, heel versus baby fight. Every match is like complicated, all these spots and dives and stuff. And you try to call it. It's like it's hard to call a match these days. It's constant action where guys aren't slowing down. And like people say like, oh, rest holds are boring. It's like, yeah, but that's 15 seconds where the announcer can talk about you.
They're afraid
to know about your character. You know, it's like
talents are afraid to slow down, Disco. They're afraid to slow down because they goddamn can't work well. They have no confidence. They can't slow down. I'm afraid to stop. It's like my life. I'm 68 years old. My wife's dead. I've got all these projects doing. I'm living in a house right now. I'm by myself, like you guys may or may not be. I'm an empty nester, man. I'm afraid to stop. And the boys are afraid to stop. I tell them this all the time. You've got to stop and let me process so I can get you over.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
I can't get yours saying, ooh, ah, wow, look at that. Oh, man, do you see that? You know,
right.
Bullshit. Come on.
Or JR, or get yourself over, because I'll give you an example. Like, I was watching a match that me and Disco had from like 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And it was just an easy, simple, basic, you know, match. But everybody was into the match, because when Disco was hitting me, I was just selling, letting him work the crowd, letting the announcer do his thing. Then he, you know what I'm saying? It was just a real simple psychological match,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
Today, I'll give you an example. I went to the show and I was the second, I was the manager of this guy, right? And they wanted me to like give him the rub. So during the match, I'm like, hey bro, turn around and work the crowd. Turn around and work the crowd. And I had to slide into the ring and tell him, and he still didn't do it. And then after the match, I'm like, bro, why weren't you working the crowd? He goes, well, I don't know what you mean. I go, what do you mean you don't know what I mean?
Wow.
Get the crowd with you. First of all, he didn't know what I mean. And then he told me, he goes, I was trying to remember what came next. They're so busy trying to remember what comes next that they forget little things. You know what I'm saying?
They forget. They're trying to remember where to do their leg slaps.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I know how frustrated. But Jim, the thing about that is as a fan, you're watching that. When you're watching nine guys on a show slapping their legs, it's like, come on, guys. You know, this looks. It's like you're exposing too much. And we keep trying to get. And as an old school guy, I always get flack. Oh, you're out of touch. This is like. I'm like, guys, there's still some elements of old school wrestling that work, but you guys just don't do it enough. But they still work. And I think the fact that these guys script everything A to Z, literally the whole match from front, you know, top to bottom. And instead of like, you know, but back in the day, we call a few spots and called mostly the rest in the ring. Because you were trying to feel the crowd and do things that would pop the crowd. Now it's just like, you know, we always blame, like, there's always been a lot of blame being placed on creative. The reason wrestling, the creative thing's creative. I'm like, guys, I'm like, you know, the work isn't helping. There's only a couple guys that really stick out that have, like, that old school and new school mentality figured out together. It's like a lot of you guys just look like you're just going out there and each guy is trying to get his shit in. And that's what every match looks like. And then, honest, let me ask you a question. Do you think the matches are too long in AEW?
No.
Here's
a put it this way. It depends on who's booked. We've had some matches. Yes, of course. We've had some matches that we may have misjudged on the booking and give them a little bit more time than they needed. But as a rule, I think that our match times are pretty decent, especially in the beginning of the show and the end of the show where you're trying to, you know, get a big finish and start and stop well. You know, I think they've done a pretty good job in that regard. So like Jericho is going to do a match, and he'll tell you what he's his storytelling is to me is terrific, and he's sharing that with like Santana and Ortiz. I love that young team. I love those kids. They're good kids. They try hard. They got good hearts. I got a lot of time for Santana and Ortiz. A lot of time. Sammy Guevara is going to be a star if he doesn't go get hurt. Doing some of the crazy shit that he does. Yeah. He's a good looking young kid. And I say this on TV, and I'm not doing it just for hyperbole. He does remind me of Eddie. Not Eddie. Is he going to be as good as Eddie? I don't know if anybody will ever be as good as Eddie. Okay? I don't know that. But I know this kid's got some great potential. And so I look at those guys, like this Darby Allin. He's young Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
He's a wiry, body tight, similar. He does unusual things that are usually ill-advised. But he's fearless. So
and he's different.
Yeah, he's different.
Let me ask you this. I had a theory on Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy that the reason that they're so over, right? And you tell me if you agree with this or not, because I think I figured this out, but I may be wrong, and I probably am wrong. But so when
are.
I see Orange Cassidy, we see guys wrestling every match, all the guys do the dive off the top, and the guys are standing there and catching him and everything. But like, what's the one thing that Orange Cassidy does, and the one thing that Darby Allin does that's like different? When Orange Cassidy does his dive over the top rope, he does it with his hands in his pockets.
Right.
When Darby Allin does the dive off the top rope, he does it backwards.
Coffin drop,
They've taken two simplistic moves that everybody does and just done them differently than everybody else does, and developed a character that's unique and different, that has mannerisms that you can impersonate. And I just think that, honestly, the reason they were so over to begin with is the fans would pop because they pop at all the spots and the dives and everything. But it's like, here comes the no-hands guy, and there's a big pop. It's like, here comes the backward splash guy, and then there's a big pop. And then they develop these personas about them, and I think that's why they stick out. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they're different. They create a reason that you want to watch them. I will tell you, I was not a Orange Cassidy fan when I first saw him, the character. I even asked Excalibur, who's called a lot of his matches, you know, tell me why I should like this kid. What is it about him that I'm missing? And we talked about it, and I saw him work more. I opened my mind up, not being so stubborn. And now he's selling as much merchandise just about as anybody we got. And that's a lot of merch. So if somebody's buying his stuff, and if you're not over, why would they're not going to buy your stuff? They don't buy stuff of a guy that's not over, bottom line.
Hey, Jim, I want to ask you one thing on this. You've seen the Meltzer Cornette feud evaporate and stuff, or the relationship. Is one guy right and one guy wrong? Are both of them right?
They're both right because all they're doing is expressing an opinion. Mm-hmm. How can anybody's opinion necessarily be wrong unless they're going to be like a lot of wrestling people and a lot of wrestling fans? So if you don't agree with me, Carlos, goddamn it, buddy, I'm sorry, you're just wrong because you don't have a right to that opinion. That's stupid.
Or we can't talk. That's even stupider.
Right.
So that's where I see that coming in. I don't know that either guy's wrong, quite frankly. And I'm not just flipping the fence here. Why don't JR want to commit because he likes both guys? I've known Meltzer for 30 years and Cornette as well. So I've got a long time with these guys, you know, and I hope that they patch all that stuff up. We don't need the bullshit. The business doesn't need the bullshit. We get maligned enough with us creating our own controversies in an underbelly type thing. I just don't agree with that whatsoever.
Well, Jim, this is the problem with today in wrestling. The reason it's difficult for it to become more popular is anytime there's a show or anytime something happens, it's just a very toxic environment online with the discussions. How could you be a wrestling fan? Like, if you're a fan of wrestling, how would you choose sides?
It's society.
Of which organization, like, and the other one's terrible. And this, it's like, it's weird. It's a very weird mindset that these fans have.
It's like this goddamn virus. You want to wait and see what the Republicans are going to say and what the Democrats are going to say, this side of the aisle, that side of the aisle. It's about their politics of the contravirus, not finding a cure and saving lives. It becomes a political issue, and it's bullshit. So it's that way. We live in a society of defiance and negativisms.
Yeah, but the thing is like, this is what's very weird for the people that didn't grow up in our era. When you were growing up, Jim, I know that if you watch Walter Cronkite or Harry Reisner or guys like that, they had credibility, correct?
Yes, sir.
And now I'll give you an example. Today somebody sent me this thing where it said that CBS got busted because they were showing people from Italy in the hospital, and they were saying it was from New York. And I'm thinking to myself, really, CBS, you're going to politicize this like That's everybody it. Else is? You're going to risk your credibility over it's ridiculous. And it's permeated everything.
Yeah, it seeped into our business as well. And Disco, you're right. How can you be a true fan and criticize everything you see? What I would do if I were you, Mr. Criticizer, is not watch, because obviously it's upsetting you. And watch, it's pro wrestling, for God's sakes. Right. It's not meant or created to upset you and change your whole goddamn demeanor on your life. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
I'll be honest. I tell everybody, WWE got me to the point where I don't watch it anymore. Cause and now, so now I'm now it's like I'm a I've been the wrestling business 27 years. I'm speaking from the perspective of somebody that stopped watching the show. So it's like, well, so like if people say, oh, well, you don't want, it's like, yeah, I don't watch. I'm telling you why I don't watch. So maybe you would want to try to correct the things that you're doing that Ron is making me not watch, because there's a lot of people like me that aren't watching. You know, fix the tone of the show with the promos and start, you know, fighting more when you wrestle. That's the two things. Like, if we address that over the next 4 or 5 years and can get guys to throw in good working punches instead of these forearms, which I can't stand. That's just me. I can't stand the forearms. I like the punches better. And just quit doing so many dives. I mean, like, they don't. That stuff doesn't mean anything anymore, you know. Like the funny thing, like I asked you about the reason the matches I think are too long in AEW, is because when you do so many false finishes, how often is the pinfall the biggest pop? Mm-hmm. It's like they do a million spots during the match where there's a huge pop and a huge roof. You could get the 1, 2, 3 and blow the roof off at the 8 minute mark, as opposed to doing it at the 14 minute mark and doing a whole bunch of other stuff. That's why I think the matches are too long in AEW. The way they work, they just do too many false finishes, and as a show, it's just like it's tiresome after a while. That's in my opinion.
Well, and you got a right to that. And I don't agree with you, Disco, but I appreciate and respect your opinion. Right. So I'm not going to go on a Twitter tirade. And
please block him on Twitter, Jim, for that comment. Jim, let me ask you. I got to ask you a question about your book, though. Quick, I was reading this thing here where it says that you discuss the fracture of your relationship with Vince. What do you think happened there between you two, without giving too much, because you want people to buy the book?
Because JR could be a giant pain in the ass, fellas, and he had a good sized ego, and I was fighting to keep my spot. And I knew that the hand that I was dealt with, being Southern, being fat, fatter than TV likes, and having Bell's palsy where I can't smile any longer, that I didn't fit the mold of what they were building and what they wanted to grow with. So I always had this edge of this chip on my shoulder. And sometimes I was easy to manage, and sometimes I wasn't. And Vince and I did have philosophical differences. In other words, I wanted to run the wishbone. He wanted to run the spread. Type deal. We both love the game of football.
Right.
You know what I mean? But we had different philosophies. But
that's a great analogy.
You're Oklahoma and he was Texas.
he made me a great living and a good quality of life I have, whether I have AEW or not. Thank God I did meet Tony Khan and I'm working there. But that was all it was, guys. It's just philosophical stuff. Vince and I still communicate. We laugh at things. He's been really busy with his stuff. There's WrestleMania season, which it doesn't sound like it or feel like it, but thanks to this goddamn virus, but not the WWE's fault, but just the virus thing. And so that was kind of the deal. This book talks a lot about Vince and my relationship, my wife's role in my life during that time as the head of talent relations, and the role she played behind the scenes that nobody knows about. The fact that I was trying to, I self-medicated, and there was a time there where Ambien wasn't enough. I took Ambien for 10 years. It's a temporary thing for insomnia. So then when Ambien wasn't enough, I'd add a Xanax to it. And when that didn't work for me, I'd chase it with Crown Royal. So you do that for a few years. You straighten your ass up. You get to work. Then you come back home and you detox. The stress and the pressure. And I've had every neurologist I've ever seen. The reason you've had 3 bouts of Bell's palsy is because of the way you process stress. And that's just my DNA. I didn't blame anybody for it. I'm not blaming my mom and dad. It's my DNA. But then I got wise to that situation, and no more. I don't do any more opiates whatsoever. And thank God for that. But that was a lot of Jan's doing to get me.
You know, cannabis is legal over there in Oklahoma now, right?
Medical, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I know about that. So it's good. But the book is. The book comes out Tuesday, and it's at, you can get it at my website, jrsbbq.com. That gets you it has a free shipping offer, which is cool, and a personalized autograph. I've been doing those today. And in the last 2 days, we sold almost 1,000 books on my website.
Well, Tom, we still haven't said the name of the book.
Under the Black Hat.
Under the Black Hat. There we go.
Yeah, you should read it. Reading's good for you.
Mm-hmm. Joe had it. I already saw it. Joe had it on the thing here. I know what the name was. I just want to make sure we got out there. Like, yeah. So people are good with JR's book. You know?
And you get it at Amazon as well. So, you know, but I think it's the most compelling read that I've written. It talks about the Attitude Era, the original XFL, all these changes going from Raw to SmackDown, and then disappearing, then getting hired back, and then disappearing, and then all these things, and just you don't realize the toll it takes on you emotionally, depending on how you're wired. If I didn't give a shit, fellas, if I didn't care about my work, if I didn't care about this business that we are all in, then I would. It would matter nothing. It would mean nothing. It's fiction, but it did mean something. I didn't play a character. I was me, for better or for worse. I was me. And so when things like that happen, it affected me more than I should have allowed it to. And I write all about that, and I think it's a hell of a compelling read in that regard. And Paul O'Brien and I, my partners, my tag partners in Ireland, that's a hot tag waiting to happen, right? So, but we got it done, man. It's number one on Amazon's pre-sale. It's the number two book is the number two new publication is the audio book. So I'm blessed with that deal. So I it's a tribute to my late wife. It's a tribute to the business. It talks about my run at WWE and all the way up to me leaving WWE, my contract expiring, and one day, the next day, AEW was here, and I signed, and here we go.
You know, as a fan and someone who's already been lucky enough to read it, I would say fans always talk about the Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling, right? And I think now on the Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling autobiographies, I would say Foley, Jericho, Bret Hart, and Jim Ross. His books are that good, so I couldn't recommend it enough.
Well, appreciate it. Thank you very much. Hope folks try it and check it out. It's a interesting read.
Yo, man, I just want to say thank you for coming on the show and talking about some of the stuff that you went through with the opiates and all that. Probably a part of you that a lot of people didn't know. And talking about your vulnerabilities, also owning up to that you were very difficult to work with. And we all know Vince was super difficult. Also manning up, because everybody's always pointing fingers, man. I don't need to tell you the respect that we have for you on this show. You know, you're the greatest to do it. You and Gordon Solie, as far as I'm concerned. Remember the old tagline, so long from the Sunshine State.
what's your Twitter, Jim?
JRSBBQ. Cool.
But anyways, I want to make sure that everybody goes, gets their Under the Black Hat. Where can they get that, Joe?
Amazon at JR's website, JRSBBQ.com. I got mine at Walmart.com. So anywhere that sells books, you can find it.
I'm gonna read it, have you autograph it, and bring you back so we have another reason to chop it up with you, JR.
Love
and,
to, man.
And everybody, go out there, get that book. Go ahead, D.I.
Yeah, just real quick, about your book. Did somebody approach you to write a book, or did you come up with the idea to write a book and then went approach and try to find publishers?
Well, I had the idea to write a book. We had Sovereign Knocker was the first one, and we used Skyhorse Publishing on that one. But then Sovereign Knocker did so well, knock on wood, and thank the God, good Lord. I pitched Simon & Schuster, and I had a friend that went to work there, and he was a big wrestling fan, and I've known him forever. And I said, look, I got an idea to write another book. If you guys are interested, let's talk. If you're not, I'll move on. I'll go back to Skyhorse. And so Simon & Schuster is doing it. It's a difference in night and day. It's a difference in working in AEW and working, the bingo hall every fourth Thursday of the year, you know, type deal. Okay. So.
I could hear every old school wrestler that just heard this on the podcast going, hey, brother, JR's got that Simon & Schuster hookup.
Right? Oh, my God. Hey, JR, do you want to hear our rendition of a wrestler? I'm of a perfect wrestling scenario that you've probably seen and heard, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna do it with Disco. Hey, Disco, that fucking Kevin Sullivan, fuck him. If I ever see him, I'm gonna beat his ass, that two-faced motherfucker.
Hey, you know Sullivan's got the book in Florida.
You got his number?
That's exactly the truth, man.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh my God.
JR, bro, we love you, man. Fucking national treasure in our industry. Say what up to Raphael Moore before me and Dirty Keith Mitchell.
Okay, man. Thanks, all right, guys. I really appreciate your help me sell this damn book. Appreciate
all right,
you
thank
guys.
You, Jim.
Thank you,
my
man.
Very much.
Peace.